On budget, the subcommittee on general government. Today is Monday, May the 23rd, and I am going to open a work session on Senate Bill 5585, the Department of Administrative Services budget. And I think Director Warner invites you to come up to the table just in case we have any questions. The committee was provided the LFO recommendation at the end of last week, and I am informed by staff that you had an opportunity to go over it. Before we start, I would just invite any opening comments from you, and then I think what we'll do is to go through the LFO recommendation, Dallas, unless you want to give us guidance in another direction.
That's fine, Madam Chair.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lori Warner, the Acting Director for the Department of Administrative Services. We have read through your recommendations that are here and understand what it is that you're about to proceed through. So I will take questions, I think, as they come up and you go through the material.
Good. And I just want to say for the record, for whoever is listening, that this morning the House Special Committee on Budget met to do your budget. I watched a little bit of it on the television. And I think there are going to be some discrepancies in those recommendations, and we will note those as we move forward. So, Dallas, if you want to start
sure.
us off.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee. First of all, House Bill, Senate Bill 5585, I'm sorry, is a blank budget bill, which will be replaced, in effect, by what was House Bill or Senate Bill 5501. You have a copy of that in front of you. We will be, the amendments are in effect to what exists in 5501, and then we will put them in 5585. My recommendation is that we pick up from where we left off out of the Joint Committee, that there was agreement on a great number of things, and so I'd like to start that as start from there.
I would welcome that.
Okay. You have in front of you my detailed memo with recommendations that's revised and my summary. I'd like to start off with my detail. The very first recommendation is to reopen what we did with the Public Employees Benefit Board with the movement of non-limited authority under to put it all under expenditure limitation. After subsequent review and discussion with the Department and the Public Employees Benefit Board, there are a couple of pieces of that of its operations in that fund that should remain under non-limited. And those are the administrative expenses for the flexible benefit plans, which are determined entirely by the demand and usage of the flexible benefit plans, and also the health insurance premium subsidy that the plan would pay for, and if it chooses to go self-insured, those are insurance type of operations and shouldn't be subject to limitation. The limit that would be imposed upon the fund is the balances in the fund. So my recommendation here is to adjust that part to only have $4,019,000 of expenditure limitation be transferred to out of the non-limited authority, and the budget bill then would have a specific these amounts are not included or not subject to limitation. That would be for the insurance activities and those administrative expenses of the flex benefit plan. Essentially then all other administrative costs of the Public Employees Benefit Board would be subject to limitation. That would include open enrollment and the day-to-day activities, excluding the wellness program after, which is not included here, after January 31 of this calendar year.
Senator Morse.
Madam Chair, where did you plan on dealing with that?
Yeah.
The $2 million of the
that reduction
wellness.
That reduction, Madam Chair, members of the committee, will be an adjustment to other agency budgets.
Okay.
And we have, in my previous recommendation, removed that limitation from the Public Employees Benefit Board. So there will be, after you have approved all of these adjustments, there will be a number of changes to charges to other state agencies, either in the form of usage fees, for example, for fleet vehicles, for communications costs, for capital mall debt service, for the controllers division, a number of changes, and we will make it through one bill an adjustment to all other agency budgets to reflect those reductions in other agency budgets as a result of what we are doing with this department's budget.
Now,
Senator Morse,
I'm sorry, I only got the last part of the reduction of $2.2 million from the wellness program. What will you tell me? Repeat what you said about it.
Oh, okay. That is the expenditure limitation for the wellness program from January 1 of 2006 through July of 2007. It's under contract right now.
And that's going to be cut.
Effective January 1.
And that will be then credited back to the other departments.
Right. They will no longer have to pay for that
okay,
amount.
That's what I thought.
That's correct.
Said.
The
okay.
departments will not no longer be paying okay. for that.
Although I disagree with it, I understand it.
Yeah. So that is the first recommendation with respect to the Public Employees Benefit Board. Our second recommendation is for the Consolidated Data Center. In the existing bill is $76,600,000 for the consolidation.
Dallas, can I stop you for
sure
just a second? Do you want us to act on these? Or are we going to come back through and act on them? You want to do them one at a time?
That's your call. It may be easier to do them at once.
Okay.
And let me know if you've got any differences with any of them. I'll make notes. But if we could do that, because I can summarize the amendments.
That would be fine.
Thank you. Okay, with the Consolidated Data Center, we are recommending removal of this amount from the budget bill because it will be placed in another bill, at a separate standalone bill, and in that bill we will also be making adjustments to all 12 of the agencies that will be consolidated also. So we're not, it will come back to the department, but in another bill. But for purposes of this bill, we will take it out. With respect to the State Services Division, we have a number of recommendations. The first has to do with fleet vehicles, and we've worked with the department on this and with members of this committee. We're recommending the elimination of three policy packages, numbers 113, 132, and 133, that have to do with replacement or addition of vehicles to the fleet. This ends up in a total reduction of the budget of about $17 million. These packages provided, I'm guessing, 600-800 vehicles, which the committee we've discussed. If the need arises, and later on the agency can come back to the emergency board and seek the expenditure authority, and the department is okay with this. I don't want to speak for the department, but we've had long number of discussions. So, the next recommendation with respect to the fleet is to reduce the other funds expenditure limitation for purchase of fleet replacement vehicles by $4.3 million. This is to bring the amount of expenditure limitation, bring it down to a point where they would have enough to replace 495 vehicles, essentially what the plan was for the first year. If you'll remember, the initial budget had a total replaced number of vehicles of 1,400, 1,600 vehicles. We're recommending approval of replacement of 495 and a sufficient limitation for them to do that. And then as we go further in the biennium and they can prove the need for additional vehicles, we will. They can come to the emergency board with that. Funding source for those would be certificates of participation. We intend to leave the authority for those certificates in the bond bill so that the funding authority will be there. The resource is just the expenditure limitation would then be granted by the emergency board on an as case-by-case basis. The next recommendation ties back to the funding source. This is to increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $2,323,957 for debt issuance and debt service costs of certificates of participation. The proceeds from these certificates will be used now and in the future to purchase fleet vehicles. This will be enough to get them going with the first purchase. Also, because of these changes, particularly with respect to the funding mechanism and other changes made in the department, savings to state agencies because of these adjustments they will make to the rates will amount to $13.6 million. This will be part of the adjustment that we were talking about in that one omnibus bill that charges to state agencies will be reduced by $13.6 million for the biennium. Also in this division, there's a reduction of the public employees retirement system and attorney general rate that amount to $96,000 for other funds for the PERS contribution rate change and $839,000 for reduction in attorney general billing rate. The reason for the significant amount for attorney general is that the risk management activities are in this division, and they use a lot of attorney general because of claims costs.
Question. Senator Morris.
Excuse me. Dallas, do you have any sense of the $13.6 million attributed to the general fund?
At this point, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Senator Morris, we do not. Roughly, we've used a rule of thumb of about one-third, 30% or so. A large portion of this actually is in the Department of Human Services, because they have significant permanently assigned. Mm-hmm. I think corrections also got a sizable savings and reduction. So it'll all, what we do, and I should take this opportunity to explain the process, we work with them to get the allocation of the reductions, and then we at Legislative Fiscal, we send it out to each of the analysts, and they take their agencies and work with them for those adjustments, feed it back to me, and we have one bill that we put it in. And generally, it's about 30-35% for these types. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
With respect to ballot measure 37, there was placeholder funds of a dollar of other fund limitation and a dollar of non-limited authority. We're recommending elimination of those. The Senate budget plan now would transfer the ballot measure 37 gatekeeper responsibility and activities to the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And so we are not recommending any additional funding in the Senate budget. This will be a point of difference because the House committee approved general fund for ballot measure 37 gatekeeper.
This
activities.
Might be the point, Dels, unless you suggest otherwise, that we stop and talk about this. Because initially, I think your policy option package was $1.7 million.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then that was reduced in the co-chair budget. And then the full committee discussed this when we were all still together. And I think some questions were raised about appraisals. I just couldn't think of the word. Appraisals, gatekeeper responsibility, why it was that DAS had any role in the land use arena, why it wasn't all consolidated at DLCD. Perhaps you'd like to comment, because this is a point of diversion from the House and the Senate versions, and it is a new wrinkle from when the whole committee was all together, and we discussed this with your professional staff at the time that the DAS budget first came forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the package, as you were recalling, had the positions in it and appraisal funds and some of those, and a database also in the package, policy package we put forth. We had funded part of that in this biennium through an e-board request to initially get this unit up and running when the ballot measure passed initially. So the situation, I think, is really a matter of policy choice for the legislature as to whether you want to house those functions in DLCD or you want to have a central screening process in DAS and then refer those out. I have spoken with Lane Shetterly, who's the director of DLCD, and he's concerned about that function moving to him in that he feels that it's better and to have sort of the screening done and the claims referred over there. But it's clearly just a policy choice. DLCD is general funded also, so I think you're still talking about putting general fund dollars into doing this activity and that type of thing. The initial issue, I think, for the screening and then the claims payment, should there be payments made, is that DAS has the benefit of that expertise in terms of handling claims and risks and settlements and legal lawsuits around how much the state's going to pay extensively because we run those other programs. So I think that's where that's sitting at the moment. I don't know that you would necessarily have a difference in the general fund dollars expended. We had, I think, with you folks when it was a joint committee, gotten to the point where we said we're not sure how much the appraisals and title search, that kind of stuff, would end up costing, and that would be deleted, and we would simply come back to an e-board as we needed to talk about where we were in the process for processing those.
For the benefit of my colleagues, I should share, I also spoke with Director Shetterly.
Mm-hmm.
And your report of his position is consistent with the conversation that I had with him. In discussions with other Senate colleagues, the question of splitting these two functions up was raised, and whether or not it made sense to have all of the claims processing occur at DLCD because of the public's belief that that is the land use agency and this is tied to land use questions. And the fact that DAS was largely providing the function of gatekeeper and traffic cop, to stretch the analogy way too far, but that the claims would come in, be reviewed by risk management in some kind of a centralized form, logged, and then sent out to the agencies where the real work occurs in resolving whatever the Measure 37 issues are.
The land use policy. I think we were providing the administrative infrastructure really to set the claims up, understand and refer, and then work through the process in terms of payment once the analytical decision making was made. So
I think for today's purposes, because if we move along expeditiously, we may try to move this bill out. We have some issues that we know are going to be flagged that will have to be resolved in some way. I think that the motivation behind consolidating all of this effort at Department of Land Conservation and Development was simply that was what is in the public's mind as largely dealing with land use issues. I would easily say that, and I would invite a correction from my two colleagues, I would easily say that this shouldn't be an issue that should hold this budget back from moving forward, and one that we can reconcile both for the policy question and the money question in some kind of a, I hope fervently when Joint Ways and Means is back together that that would be the forum in which we would resolve this. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that the state will be a recipient of indirect claims that would come through local jurisdictions that would then be possibly appealed to the state, and that venue would be in DLCD or the Court of Appeals. How does this function in DAS relate to essentially verifying and participating in that appeal process of a local land use decision?
Well, Madam Chair, DLCD, of course, has jurisdiction over the appeals of those land use decisions that come to them. Those would not necessarily come to DAS. If we get into litigation, then and claims processing of litigation and attorney fees, we usually, DAS Risk Management works with the agencies to work through some of those. So if you want to get into this a little deeper, I can have David Hartwig come to the table and we can have more of a discussion about the legal aspects. I think we're not certain yet how much appeals work and litigation there will be around Measure 37 until after some of the final orders are issued and we see what the claimants actually do in terms of proceeding.
Go ahead, Senator Morris.
I guess, you know, for me on this issue, it's where does it make the most sense? I don't have any heartburn one way or the other. It's just functionally where ought it to be. And thinking about the downstream issues that are not direct claims to the state, but they're indirects coming up through that land use system, and how this activity would relate to either verification of those claims, or I'm not sure as to how that might.
Well, and perhaps that's some of the discussion that needs to occur in order to decide where to land this between the two chambers as far as what you think the benefits are in one place versus the other.
Let's go ahead and build part of that record right now if you'd like to to invite your colleagues forward and we can talk about this. I share Senator Morris's feeling that I think it's more a question of common sense. Where do you put this that makes the most sense? The fact that DLCD is grossly underfunded to be dealing with the complexity and the plethora of Measure 37 claims, And then keeping in mind that it is at the agency level, other than at Department of Administrative Services, where the real work on these claims is going to happen. And last but not least, the fact that unless something is unknown to me, there is not a deep reservoir of compensation. And so as far as appraisals and dealing with some of the nitty-gritty to actually issue checks as a result of claims simply isn't going to happen because there's no money. So correct me, please, if I'm mistaken in any of those opinions.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Hartwig. I'm Administrator of the State Services Division within Department of Administrative Services. I think I'd have to concur with your comments, Madam Chair, about what we know currently about the process. The only additional comment I might make to Senator Morris is that any legal challenge to decisions made by Measure 37 activities would fall outside of responsibilities for the insurance fund. The insurance fund is funded exclusively for liability, workers' compensation, and property exposure. So any, I'm not exactly sure what you're getting out on the indirect claims coming back to the state, but any litigation related to Measure 37 decisions would rest with the state to defend in a manner outside the insurance fund.
I think, Madam Chair, the basic issue here is we haven't identified a funding source to either litigate those or pay folks out for those either way. So that is still yet to be seen in terms of what the policy is going to be and how we move forward.
Yes.
Madam Chair, just to muddy the waters, I will add that Senate Bill 1037 is introduced that would place the gatekeeper responsibility with the Department of Administrative Services. So there's another opportunity for the discussion to take place also.
Thank you for that piece of information. I think perhaps the more information that we can gather about this, I think you're hearing from the committee, this is not hard and fast philosophic argument so much as it's something that just simply makes sense. Where does this appropriately reside? And the question of whether or not there's a role for the Department of Administrative Services here. So any additional information that you can provide us would be very informative, I think.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for claims update, there's been 471 claims filed with the state so far. 381 of those claims have been processed. 371 of those have been assigned to DLCD as the regulating agency. As part of the process of those 381 claims, there's a notice requirement for adjacent property owners. We have issued 6,800 letters to adjacent property owners.
Stop for just a second there, if you don't mind. What are the requirements? Does it have to be contiguous, or what's the how adjacent is adjacent?
For properties within urban growth boundary, it's 100 feet. Outside urban growth boundary, it's 250 feet. And then it's 750 feet for property that's governed by forestry or farm usages. So anything that would be contiguous to the properties within those definitions, we would send a notice letter to adjacent property owners.
Were those definitions embedded in the ballot measure, or are those developed by rule? Where did these come from?
Madam Chair, those notice requirements are embedded in our rule.
In your rule?
Yes.
In Department of Administrative Services rule?
Yes. In regards to processing Measure 37 claims.
Help me while I stumble around with this for a second. In anticipation of Measure 37 claims, Department of Administrative Services adopted rule.
Yes, we did.
Okay.
It was done in an anticipation of the measure passing, we put together a group of on a task force that included Department of Justice, DLCD, Forestry, Parks, ODOT, and we took the work that was done for Measure 7 three or four years ago and basically adopted the structure that had been put in place in anticipation of Measure 37 being implemented as a starting point. We just didn't have any experience, any information about what we were getting into, so that's how we started.
Was there a public component to this rule promulgation?
Well, the rules were adopted as temporary administrative rules. We have just completed our formal process for adopting permanent administrative rules. We had a hearing on Monday, May 17th. The rules, according to our guidelines, the permanent rules need to be finalized by May 28th, and so we're in the process of developing permanent rules for what we know and for what's in place now.
I still respectfully didn't hear an answer to my question. What degree of public? I mean, I'm trying to figure out how inside a UGB is 100 feet the right number. Why shouldn't it be 500? Why shouldn't it be 1,000?
Madam Chair, as I recall the discussions when we developed that rule, that notice requirement is consistent with what current land use notices are that most counties implement within their land use process. And so we tried to adopt the same type of process that people were familiar with in the regular land use proceedings. And so that's how we got to those notice requirements.
Senator Morse?
I can understand, thank you, Madam Chair, that in a regular land use proceeding you would notify the neighbors who may have an objection. Do people who have an objection to changes in Measure 37 have anything to say about it? Is it a courtesy that you're doing that, or is it a type of hearing where people come in and make a case against the change because it would damage their property? Is that the idea?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, again, the process was set in place to try to mirror the current land use proceedings. Those property owners that have given notice have 10 days to submit a written comment about the property and the Measure 37 claim. There is not a hearing that's set for them to comment on that particular claim. Madam Chair, in response to your question about public hearings in regards to the rules, we gave notice in I'm not sure the count, but all the major newspapers throughout the state of the hearing. We solicited written comment on the rules that was would have been received through last Wednesday, but we had one public hearing, and it was here in Salem on the 17th.
How much, just as a curiosity, how much public input did you have?
Madam Chair, to my knowledge to date, we've received one letter from the City of Newburgh, and we had four individuals up here for the public hearing. Most of their interest, however, was on the Marion County process for Measure 37 claims.
Right. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to refresh my memory, was it a $500,000 of emergency fund appropriations that we provided you to start processing? Do you recall the amount?
I was suffering from a cloud actinia. I don't recall it.
Cloud actinia.
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, to the best of my recollection, I believe it was a little more than $500,000. I want to But
maybe
just
we
not
should
sure,
have Cora answer this question because I think she knows.
We'd invite Ms. Parker up to the table. You can drag your chair up with if you'd like.
Actually, Madam
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Cora Parker from the Department of Administrative Services Budget Management Division, and unfortunately, I'm not going to provide a whole lot of clarity. I don't have the exact number. My recollection is that the request was for something just over $500,000, and that what we actually approved was something just under $500,000. But I too, would have to find the exact number to be able to do.
Madam Chair, I'm not asking for the exact number.
Sure.
That was my recollection.
Roughly $500,000.
$500,000, and I'm coming at this from $500,000 we've processed or received 471 claims, and we're just shooting at in the dark at this point, I assume, as to what the demand is going to be. Whether the policy option package is projected as adequate or not.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, the positions were asked for as limited duration, and we expected that we would report back to emergency boards as this evolved, because you're right, we can't know today what the future's going to look like and how much, how many claims, how rapidly, how much litigation or any of that. We really don't know. We're just estimating at this point.
Would it be appropriate to have some kind of a reporting back process, not a budget note, but just it'd be important for the emergency board to know how this thing is progressing? Is there some venue that you would...
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, well, my expectation as agency director is when the division starts running into difficulty in terms of workload versus staffing, that we would then be talking with budget management about that and be looking to an emergency board to come in and to talk about if we thought we needed additional staffing or dollars for various aspects of this, and we would come in. At this point, there isn't any regular reporting back to the emergency board that's been identified, but that's, you know, certainly something we could do too, just in terms of updates. And I'm not sure what has gone on with DLCD, but that's what we would expect, is that the staffing we asked for here continues the staffing that we had in place, and that we would see how that worked, and you know, we'd have to just be willing to come back and talk with folks as that changes.
Madam Chair, I know that exceeds the expenditure limitation, that we would have that opportunity.
Yep.
My interest is on the other side of the equation.
Oh, if it's less than?
If it's less,
yeah.
That we could have that discussion. So.
And I think, just before Dallas comments, following from your comment, I think waiting until we're in trouble might not be a prudent standard. And we might want to think about some more regularized reporting back, because clearly the legislature has an interest in knowing how. Thank you, Dallas.
Well, the Senate plan would have all of that responsibility with the Department of Land Conservation and Development.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Anything else? I think we're going to move on from this point, but clearly this is a point of divergence from the House recommendation, and did they approve it, or what did they do this morning?
The House subcommittee approved it, and it'll go to the House floor, I believe, on Friday.
Okay, so it's more than a recommendation. I guess I'm just looking, Madam Director, for your acknowledgement that this is still a point of discussion. If we move the budget today with this, come back and...
Madam Chair, we clearly understand that this is a difference of opinion between the House and the Senate, and we'll work to try to resolve this and clarify as much as we can be helpful.
Well, I think also, given the gravity of the whole issue and the public interest in the issue, that I would like to make sure that we provide some venue to have Mr. Shetterly also be able to weigh in some more regularized way than just an informal conversation with me. I think this is a very serious decision, and is one where we ought to put our best thinking, House and Senate versions notwithstanding, we ought to get our best thinking about how to most efficiently handle these. And I can't fully frame my opinion absent some comment from Director Shetterly. Okay, let's move on. Anything else, Dallas, you want to add? We'll move on then with the rest of the LFO recommendation, marking this as an issue.
Thank you. The next one with this division is just a transferring other funds expenditure limitation for debt service on its e-procurement system. This was with the Information Resources Management Division. It'll be transferred to this division. This is this division also has the purchasing activities and surplus, and there was a development of a system that we used certificates of participation to fund, and so the debt service moves from one division to this division. That's a recommendation. Also, a transfer of non-limited authority. We would recommend the transfer of $14 million of other fund non-limited expenditure authority to put it under expenditure limitation. And these are associated with procurement, surplus property activities, and the remaining non-limited authority. So what would remain in this division would be non-limited authority for its insurance fund. Performance measures with respect to this one, you have with you the back summary of the list of the performance measures, and we would recommend approval of numbers 5, 19, 20, 21, and 24 as included in the department's performance measure summary. We previously approved a number of them, had some deleted, and so we now are making recommendations on those that we haven't taken action on.
Just because I'm opportunistic and have the gavel so I can ask this question. With respect to the fleet and the divestiture of surplus property, I'm a little vague on how our conversations went for the sale of cars that are rotating out of the fleet or buses or other specialty vehicles. Is there a mechanism, a formalized mechanism, that makes a list of those vehicles available to not-for-profits so that they can have the opportunity to come in and basically shop at the Department of Administrative Services?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the majority of those vehicles are sold on eBay, so they are available to folks to purchase if they wish. So if that is the process, you had asked specifically, I think, and we had gotten back to you in writing in more detail about the availability of some of those. So
I apologize. I just in the tsunami of paper that has swept over my office. What I'm really trying to figure out is how the not-for-profits can queue jump in front of eBay and solicit the best deals for driving nice old ladies to the grocery store in rural Oregon.
Yeah. Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, right now we don't have a process for nonprofits to jump to the front, but we can follow up on that and look at that and see what restrictions are in place that prohibits that and come up with some proposal about how to address it.
I'd welcome the chance to work with you on that, because in lots of rural communities that have lost public transportation, the availability of somebody else's old reject bus to go do gleaning and things like that makes all the difference in the world to a small, underfunded not-for-profit. And I think some of us that have the privilege of serving on boards of those same kinds of not-for-profits would welcome a chance to augment their vehicular opportunities. Senator Morrison.
Yeah, thank you. Is there an anticipated amount that you have when you sell vehicles on eBay? In other words, if you made them available to not-for-profits at a lower price, is that a fiscal impact on the state? I don't know what the...
Do they go to eBay with a minimum?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, yes, they do.
Oh.
We seek the highest value that we can obtain in selling of the vehicles. But I think we have an opportunity to follow up to look for some way to maybe enhance that process for nonprofits.
Senator Morrison.
I'm sorry, you were in the middle
of things.
No,
go ahead.
Well, I guess you could resolve that by not determining what your expected value would be on eBay until you got rid of the ones at a lower price and not-for-profits. That's one way of doing it.
Thank you.
Well, and I'd want some pretty strict sideboards on this, too, so that we didn't have a not-for-profit free-for-all here. There'd have to be some high public use or some public benefit clearly demonstrable. We'll get back to you. We don't need to take the committee's time.
Okay. Because right now it is basically a minimum, and then it bids up from there so that the state gets the highest value from them as possible. So we, you know, I don't know statutorily if we can go to what? To providing something of benefit to the nonprofits, but we certainly can look at that.
Great. Thank you. Dallas, moving on.
Okay. That concludes the recommendation with respect to the Department of the State Services Division. Moving on, then, the next one is the Information Resources Management Division. As you remember, there was a lot of discussion about how the budget of that division essentially was a placeholder budget. They really didn't have their arms around it, and it was still under analysis and work and rework. And the first recommendation here is to increase other funds expenditure limitation by $25.8 million, which is a net figure of a reduction in personal services and some other costs and an increase in other funds costs for payment of services and supplies, or a lot of telecom services and the like, and the elimination of 25 positions or 24 and the equivalent 24.42 FTE to rebuild this department's this division's budget. They've worked very hard to try to get a handle on the demand for services and resources needed for those and the cost of them. Most of the agency budgets already have included, they know what the fees are. There are some adjustments to fees, but by and large, this whole entire adjustment results in no additional charges overall to state agencies. It's just acknowledging what the real demand and cost will be in this division of the Department of Administrative Services. And there is a significant reduction in personnel here. They've done a hard and long look at this. As you know, they've changed management in the last 2 years, and this is our recommendation. It's consistent. This is what the department has brought forward, and we're comfortable with it. Additionally, agency budgets will be adjusted to reflect an additional $1.3 million in savings from reduced telecommunications rates resulting from Smart Buy initiative. So you'll see that reduction coming forward in that adjustment, large adjustment bill. With respect to cybersecurity, if you have my memo of the 8th, I think Friday, it's been changed a little bit. Some new information came to light. We are recommending the approval of the establishment of a total of 10 positions. Originally, we thought it was 9 permanent and 1 limited duration, but it's 8 permanent positions and 2 limited duration positions, and an increase in other funds expenditure limitation of $21.5 million for phase 2 of the enterprise cybersecurity implementation. This will result in an adjustment to charges to agencies by an additional $6.6 million. Remember, we've already reduced it by 13.6 for the fleet, 1.3 for IRMD here for telecommunications. Additionally, in some other division budgets, there were also reductions to other state agency budgets. But this will be an increase.
But the state agencies are also, because this was part of the discussion, I just want to make sure it's reflected in the record, they are receiving a decrease in assessment as a result of the PEB Wellness Center.
That's correct.
And part of that was used to offset the additional cost for this. And I think some of us were brought very quickly by your good Dr. Fleming that we have a very serious problem here and that this is something that needed to be attended to. I hope, incidentally, he's well and back at work. Good.
The division, we were recommending a reduction for reduced public employees' retirement system rates of $230,000 and $10,000 for reduced attorney general rates. Here is in the existing bill, there's a lot of non-limited authority for other funds, tune of $91.5 million. We're recommending all that be transferred to expenditure limitation. This may result in a return to the e-board for additional expenditure limitation, but we think it's a good idea that the legislature understands the impact of changing rates and costs out there and what it really does impact, how it does impact state government. Then performance measures, we're recommending approval of performance measures numbers 9, 10, and 11 as included in the attached summary. And also we're recommending that we require the department to develop some performance measures relating to cybersecurity and report back to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee on this. It's a significant investment in cybersecurity, and it was suggested that we have them develop some performance measures and work with the Audits Committee on that.
And if my memory serves me correctly, also awaiting the arrival of the business case for some of the elements of the cybersecurity package of initiatives that you're taking on throughout state government.
Madam Chair, the scenic budget enables a number of different programs into the future. Cybersecurity, of course, is the highest one on the list just because of the risk exposure the state has. So it's the beginning.
If I may, Madam Chair, with respect to that, the department will be presenting an updated business case to the on the scenic project to the House Information Management Technology Committee. I will take this opportunity to promise to get copies available to members
Good.
Of this committee so you can see that updated business case.
Good.
With respect to the Progress Board, we're just recommending approval of the performance measures numbers 13, 14, and 15 and the summary of the department performance measures to keep the Progress Board intact.
And I just want to mark for the committee, this
That's
is another divergence from the House. And a point that we'll have to come back and resolve, hopefully, in the joint Ways and Means process. Mm-hmm. Senator Morse.
Is this a pretty strongly held position? How would you characterize it on a scale of 1 to 10?
Please, Dallas. I just heard the cavalry arrive.
We have been informed that this is a priority of the governor's. The House doesn't see it that way, and in all likelihood, when originally my plan was to recommend taking it out, it's no longer taken out in the Senate plan, but it was done with the full expectation there would be subsequent discussions probably happening later on in the session.
I would just like to add from my perspective that I think the discussions that have occurred about housing some of the oversight and development of performance measures in the Legislative Fiscal Office, along with people and sufficient money to do so, makes a certain amount of sense to me. It seems as though the connect point between the progress, between LFO and the performance measures, that to me is where the nexus occurs. And particularly given that the analysts work with the agencies over time and are intimately familiar with their budgets, I very much like the idea of having an augmented performance measure function in the Legislative Fiscal Office, whether or not that results in the Progress Board going or staying is of almost less concern to me than we have a thoughtful mechanism inside Legislative Fiscal to do the promulgation and monitoring of performance measures. It seems to me that's the logical place to have that happen.
And you folks will be hearing that budget in the next few weeks.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Director.
I think you folks are probably aware that at the end of the last session, the Progress Board was not funded and the positions were left in the DAS budget, and so it's been a struggle. And then the legislature has taken, as well as the governor, a heightened interest in performance measures. This is a board, the Progress Board has three staff positions, a clerical position and then two professional positions, and they staff a board of outside members. And the statutes have quite a body of work that it's directed to do, and I think that this function, especially with a heightened increase in performance measure interest, has been rather understaffed, and agencies look for guidance and direction and help in trying to figure these out and how to make them useful for the legislature and the governor. So I think there's more discussion that needs to occur around what role the legislative body plays in terms of LFO and how budget management would work with that on the governor's side, and then how we staff it. So.
One of the other, because I've had the privilege of being able to stay with the same agencies for all of my service in the legislature, I recall the discussion surrounding the Progress Board the last time, and that was the legislature asking them to go out and solicit funds externally. The business community had evidenced great interest in having the work of the Progress Committee, and I think a number of us thought that it would be appropriate to have them participate in the financial burden of the Progress Board. I don't know, because I was not in a position to receive a formal report from the Progress Board about how their external fundraising initiatives had gone, and I think that would be very useful to see how well they have done.
Madam Chair, we can get that information back to you. They have some grants, and they were also raising the money for Oregon Shine, which is the vision document. Aside from the performance measures, the board's responsible for that visioning, you know, the 20-year plan, which is the Oregon Shine's part of it, and then the larger benchmarks that link to agency performance measures. So the statutes prescribe much of that, and if there's going to be changes, it would be helpful to have statutory changes that are matched up with what the budget changes are.
Well, clearly this will be something that will be subject to a reconciliation discussion with the House version, so let's move on to facilities.
Okay. The next recommendation has to do with capital improvements. That's under the Facilities Division. Our first recommendation is to increase the other funds limitation for capital improvements by $668,000. For projects that have been approved for this current biennium, but they won't be completed by June 30th of 05. In prior biennium, rules allowed them to spend up through the end of December monies appropriated through June 30th, you know, but those rules have changed, so they need expenditure authority to finish these projects. These are projects that should be finished by December 31st of 2005. We're just carrying over limitation. Reduce the assessment for Capital Mall improvement debt service for those agencies on the Capital Mall. This reduction of $680,000 is a result of a miscalculation on the required debt service, but it was included in the price list for agencies, so we'll be reducing those budgets again through that state omnibus type of adjustment bill. The capital construction recommendation, there is no funding in the budget, this bill, for capital construction. The capital construction projects are in a separate bill because of the 6-year expenditure limitation that accompanies them. And so what we have here is a recommendation for this committee's recommendation to the Senate chair. And then that would memorialize the recommendation of this subcommittee. We put it in the bill folder so that when that bill is worked by whichever subcommittee, whether it be a joint or a Senate or the like, that you would have at least a recommendation with respect to the capital construction for this department. The capital construction bill contains more than just the Department of Administrative Services capital construction. So these are the recommendations that we have. And it, rather than go through the individual recommendations, it might be more enlightening if I explain to you what the difference between what we're recommending be included and what's not, what we've taken out.
Why don't you do that?
Okay. We're recommending no $1 placeholder limitations. The past practice has been to put a dollar placeholder there so that the discussion can continue. Well, the emergency board can establish an expenditure limitation. It doesn't have to add on to one. It can, by law, establish an expenditure limitation. So if a project comes forward, the emergency board can establish a limitation. So we think that a $1 placeholder isn't necessary.
Senator Morris.
Well, this is new interpretation.
No,
it's longstanding.
I think the reason that people like the $1 in there, that I don't want to sound catty, but I think they sneak a dollar in there, and then they come back to board later saying full discussion was had in Ways and Means, and that didn't always happen. And the dollar limitation, if it's in the capital construction bill, lasts for 6 years. So if you miss this next e-board, maybe you catch it on the turn.
After somebody forgets.
Yeah. I just don't think that that's good fiscal practice. It doesn't necessarily lend itself to the legislative oversight that we think is warranted by capital construction.
Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You explained half of my question, the $1 placeholder.
Okay.
What happened to the emergency situations that were discussed at one point concerning if you turn a breaker off in this building, you may not get lights. You know, the whole electrical system might go gunny bag. Secondly, there was, I thought, a community. Well, what was it? A information services problem with computers in this building?
Bill drafting for legislative council.
Oh, that's in this building. That's a separate bill.
That's a separate bill.
The capital construction is only for executive branch agencies.
Okay, not legislative.
That is correct.
Okay. The governor's here in this building, too.
Right. But he rents space from us.
Oh.
Yes, that same discussion was
good.
They talked a little bit. Yeah, I understand there's something out there for capital construction or improvements for this building, but that's not part of this bill.
Okay.
It would be in the capital construction bill, but through the legislative agency's budget request.
But we will see that at some point.
Yes, you will.
Okay, good. Thank you.
We're not recommending any expenditure limitation for the ODOT building for transfer. There are issues surrounding that that still need to be addressed by the agency for you folks as you move forward with the ODOT budget. There's some policy issues about ownership of the building, responsibility, and cost, and how to pay for it out of highway funds versus uniform rent. And until that is resolved pretty much by the Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee, we think it's a bit premature to put limitation in for capital construction, and final decision hasn't been made yet on how to proceed. In accordance with direction I set during public hearings, there's no recommendation for planning for a new structure on the red lot. So what's left are some funds for that we think are necessary, have been ongoing finishing up projects, some planning funds that are customary, but HVAC projects. The list is here.
Director Warner, you look as though you want to offer a comment. I invite one if you do. Okay.
So, Madam Chair, we've been through these with Dallas, and we're in agreement.
Cool. Okay.
And again, then the funding authority would be funding would be through certificates of participation or bonding authority, and we would make any adjustments into that bill for what we've made here out of the governor's reckon. So I just let you know that will continue. The next item is issuance costs for certificates of participation for capital construction. There was a budget amount requested in, I'm not sure which memo you're looking at. If you're looking at, here's the new memo. We earlier recommended a reduction of about $700,000 to the request. The department got back to me and said, whoops, Dallas, you made a mistake, and I agree. I'm recommending a reduced amount, to reduce the amount by $213,940, so that what would remain in limitation would be $1,064,000. And this would be, right now it's in the request, it's non-limited. We're recommending moving it to limitation authority. This will provide enough limitation for the issuance of certificates of participation for some things that we know have already been approved, the construction will just need to be issuing them a little bit later on, early in this biennium, in this upcoming biennium, and we want them to have sufficient limitation to issue the debt. Both many of the projects have already been approved. Miscellaneous distributions, we're recommending no change to the governor's recommended budget. This is an amount that, and we would also recommend this remain non-limited authority. This is pretty much the collection and accounts for the disbursement of mass transit funds. There's people who are employed in the mass transit district by the state. The state pays a certain amount to the Department of Administrative Services, who then disperses it to mass transit districts. Special governmental payments, we're recommending an increase in the lottery fund allocation for county fairs by $14,171. This is to reflect a change in the consumer price index since the development of the budget. The statute that set up this payment, for lottery funds to county fairs, set an amount, and then it allowed it to be increased for changes in consumer price. It allowed it to be changed for changes in the consumer price index, and the consumer price index has changed slightly since the governor's budget was built, and it requires an additional $14,000 of lottery fund limitation. Then we would in this section of the budget was $6.4 million to the federal government. If you'll remember, there was a settlement on the PERS blended rate. And what we're going to recommend here is that that amount be identified separately in the budget bill. That when we approve the appropriation for general fund, it be identified separately from those the remaining funds for operations. So those are that's the last of the recommendations that we had reviewed. All the following recommendations have been approved. You can see the dates that the committee's approved them. They're summarized there. I have prepared for you a May 22nd revised summary of the actions taken or the recommendations, and let me explain some of the changes to the budget bill. We would recommend that, well, first of all, the general fund appropriation would show would be split between the operating, the general fund for operations, which is a nominal amount of about $2 million or a little less, 1.6 or $2 million in this one, I think, and 6.4 as a payment for the federal government for the settlement on the PERS blended rate. Then we would recommend also then a segregation of other funds for operations. In the past, in the budget bill, it was just one lump sum for operations. If I refer you back to Senate Bill 5501, where you can see one liner there for operating expenses. And we're recommending that be broken out between the limitation for Information Resources Management Division would have one line, the State Services Division would be one amount, and then the balance of operating expenses, a third amount. This is just to provide, and then when the consolidated data center bill passes, that would be a fourth distinction in the agency's budget. So going forward, we would have its operations broken up into essentially three that provide a lot of services to outside agencies, and then the fourth was a lot of the back office support, the State Services Division that writes checks and central accounting and the like. Budget management director's office. So we're recommending that segregation for the other funds limitation. Then also there was a budget note. There's been one budget note that has been approved. It's at the back of your recommendation. You've seen this. This is the one, the best practices budget note. This budget note would be it has been approved by both of the chairs. It has a companion budget note that will rest in the legislative agency's budget report for legislative fiscal office to work with the Department of Administrative Services to develop these performance measures for best practices for small boards and commissions.
Good.
There are two draft budget notes out there that have not yet been approved. One of them relates to looking at the total compensation cost to employees by classification, comparing them to the total compensation cost of those in the private sector. That has not yet been approved. We can, if it's on the record that you would like us to continue to work on that, if we get the co-chair approval or the chair's approval, to incorporate it then into the budget report. It's being worked on. There's another budget note that you'd requested on having the controller's division or the department look at further providing more services or consolidating services for boards and commissions and smaller agencies to see if it would be cost effective to do so. Both of those notes, if you approve, we will continue to pursue. No promises or guarantees that they would end up in the budget report, but if we can get the approval of the respective chairs, then we could get it on the budget report for when this budget would be coming to a full. We expect, if you approve of these changes today, we would expect this to be on the full committee's agenda for Friday.
What time are we meeting on Friday?
The 2 minutes.
Yeah, they would have to be approved before then to get it.
What time are we meeting on Friday?
I believe here in the afternoon, and boy, I'd fail miserably because I'm so foggy. You guys have been meeting all over the place. So we would essentially make changes, delete performance measures, show the ones that have been approved, make amendments that reflect all of these adjustments. What would go forward, of course, is we would be adjusting other agency budgets through a separate bill, but based on the actions that this committee has taken.
Oh, thank you.
Job.
I'm pleased to inform you that we'll be meeting at 1 in Hearing Room B. Thank you.
Now I'm trying to think, have I missed anything?
Yes. There was some discussion early on during the full committee about cell phone, both knowledge of how many cell phones are out, what levels of service there are, what the control mechanisms are. And I don't know whether or not we would like to conceptually go ahead with that as a budget note, or if, Dallas, you have any other reporting mechanism that the committee should consider.
Possibly, Madam Chair, members of the committee. If we could get the department maybe to get on the record and say we would follow up on this and maybe provide a report at some time during the interim to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. Would you be willing to, on the number of cell phones and the cost, if you could?
Madam Chair, we've been researching that issue, and it's been a little harder to track down than what we might have expected. But I got some data today that I haven't looked at yet, and I think we may be able to provide you a written memo back within the week here about what the number of cell phones are and answer the questions that you had. So I think that's coming shortly.
I think I feel strongly enough about this that I'm going to want something more than just a memo back to this committee. This transcends the level of a question. I mean, it is to me, as a former business owner, this is a fundamental control issue. And I may guide the committee in the direction of having some more formal reporting mechanism than just simply a memo back.
Well, and you may, Madam Chair, I don't know, you may want to see what the memo says and whether it addresses your needs or not at that point.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for responding to the questions, Lori. But the statement, the state does not have a policy that governs under what circumstances and to whom a cell phone may be issued. And back to the control issue that the Chair has just addressed. That is troublesome if, in fact, we don't have, and it's kind of a free-for-all in the agency, or one agency has one standard, another agency has another standard. It raises a lot of questions. We may be just great and having good discipline. Mm-hmm. We don't know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, right, Madam Chair, Senator Morris, right now it is left to agency discretion, their management, to determine who needs cell phones and for what purposes. And if you want to have more central control over that and guidance and criteria, that is not there. It is a management judgment call based on the person's work, and it's left up to agency discretion to make those determinations at this point. But the actual data on numbers that we have in place and stuff is the information we haven't gotten back to you.
Is there some point in DAS that centrally coordinates that information as it comes back in? What I'm trying to get at is I know that cell phone usage, and more to the point, unauthorized cell phone usage, has been the issue at a root of a number of very well-publicized personnel issues. And if each agency has a slightly different policy and employees move from agency to agency, I think that I'm joining at least one colleague, perhaps two, on this panel looking for some kind of evidence of control, and I like the word discipline, with respect to how these phones are used, and frankly, notice to employees about what the expectations are for personal usage, so that there's some kind of coordinated personnel policy about this issue, and somebody doesn't find out as they move from agency to agency that the policy's changed and they're subject to disciplinary proceedings that they never expected.
Madam Chair, let me see. Mike, do you want to talk any about what IRMD is doing in this area? Okay. We've just started working on policy around acceptable use and of all equipment, because cell phone is just one piece. You've got the computer itself, you've got regular telephone usage, you've got printer, all that, those sorts of things. And employees in the department for DAS itself, basically, we have that written policy on acceptable use. I don't know exactly what each agency has out there right now. You're right, they could have varying policies and practices about acceptable use practices. So I understand what the issue that you're raising.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree that there needs to be some overall policy that is clearly explained. However, I would imagine that each department and agency could better make a decision about which employees need to use a cell phone. I mean, that depending upon the nature of their job, which varies from department to department, I could see an overall policy on classifications not being very efficient because of the nature of the work of the individual, which may change. Mm-hmm. So I think the overall policy is very important in terms of when what you can't do. So.
Okay. I think that unless Dallas suggests to us that we shouldn't do this, that I would like to figure out if we add a note to request a report to the Joint Audit Committee, or that this be an issue looked at during the interim. Dallas, give us some guidance.
Well, I think if we could put into the budget report this discussion, and that the committee would request the Audit Committee, or that we communicate and ask the Audit Committee to undertake this during the interim.
Is that acceptable to the committee?
Without it being a budget note per se, but it could be in the discussion, and as the committee's intention this would go forward, and we would ensure then that be communicated to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, and it could scope a review, then come back probably. It would come back with some recommendations to the next legislative session or even legislation.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My interest is that somebody is watching, somebody's looking, somebody is creating a policy. I would be very satisfied if DAS would accept the responsibility to look at this and then engage with the Audits Committee in the interim as to what is appropriate. And,
which we'd be happy to do.
Yeah.
We issue statewide policy in a number of areas and guidance to agencies, so this can clearly be done.
Right. And that would be, I think, a major step forward, is that somebody is intentionally looking and coming to conclusions as to whether we're on track or off track.
Okay, well, I think you see concurrence with the panel, and so, Dallas, we'd ask you to...
We'll work with staff, get it in the budget report, this discussion, and then we will see that gets transmitted then out of that to the Audit Committee for follow-up. Thank you.
Okay, great. All right, so at this point, again, Dallas, unless you correct me, we are looking for a motion for the entire...
To approve the LFO recommendations.
Right, to approve the LFO recommendations. Before I solicit the motion, I just want to make sure that I know where we're going. We're looking for a motion to approve the LFO recommendations, and then also contained in that motion the interest in continuing work on the refined drafting of these two budget notes.
That is part of the record, that we will continue to work on those two budget notes that have been approved.
Okay.
So moved.
All right. Any objection? Okay.
Motion to amend the bill.
All right.
We need a motion to amend Senate Bill 5585.
Senator Morris moves that we amend Senate Bill 5580. Do I need to go through all the details of all of the amendments?
To reflect the LFO recommendations.
To reflect the LFO recommendations. Objection. Okay, so ordered.
Then a motion to send it to the full committee with a due pass as amended.
Okay. Okay, Senator Morissette moves Senate Bill 50. God, I've forgotten the
5580.
Bill. 2 seconds. 5580 to the 5585. I apologize, to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Objection. So moved, and we need a carrier. Senator Morris volunteers.
Well, just because I made the motion doesn't mean I want to carry it. I caught myself after.
You had that look on your face, like, I don't want to do this.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And then you will not have to meet to do this again tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Any other comments from the committee? Director, any other comments from you or any of your staff? Well, there being none, then I will declare us adjourned until next Tuesday, because Monday is Memorial Day, so we will not be together until next Tuesday at 3:00. Thank you very much.